The proposed staff motion hire Makita as a general investment consultant and hire Allborn as the private markets investment consultant and authorize the executive director to enter into investment consultant agreements with Makita and Allborn.
Someone make the motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
So just so I have that right, Ken was opposed?
Yeah.
Any others?
Somebody did
I think that was
Tina.
A late aye.
No,
it was
a late.
It was Tina.
Yeah. Tina opposed.
Tina
opposed?
Did
anyone, aye. Anyone online oppose the motion? Okay. All right. Move on. Kelly, certification of police officer and firefighter trustee election results.
Yes, thank you. So I know the agenda today is a little bit out of order, just to explain why. We did invite the IAC members to come to this meeting, so that's why we did those two investment items early in the meeting and then the other investment items later, if you're wondering why we're kind of out of order today. So the next item we have is a certification of the trustee election. So as you know, the police officer and firefighter trustee terms end on August 31st of this year. So in preparation for that and in accordance with the board's policy, DPFP contracted with Yes Elections to conduct an election for the trustee positions. The active members of the police and fire departments are eligible to vote for their respective trustees. Retirees do not get to vote in this election. The voting period ended on June 28, 2023. To be elected as a trustee, the candidate must receive 50% plus one vote, or we will have a runoff election. Nobody receives more than 50% of the votes between the top two candidates. In the police officer trustee election, 238 votes were cast of the 3,048 eligible electors, which is a turnout rate of 7.81%, and the candidate Michael Taglianti received 55.46% of the vote, so he's been elected to serve as the police officer trustee position beginning September 1st, 2023, and his term will be for 3 years. In the firefighter election, their turnout was 19.42%. There was 393 votes out of 2,024 possible electors in that vote. No candidate received more than 50% of the vote, so we will have a runoff. The runoff will be between Armando Garza and Matthew Schumer. That runoff election is scheduled to begin Tuesday, July 20th, and end at noon on August the 1st. So today I'm asking for the board to certify the results of the election that we've had and authorize the runoff election between Armando and Matthew Schumer. And then after that's done, we'll bring the results back at the August meeting. There we go.
Yeah, it's probably proper for you and Ken to Ken, I guess it's against your interest.
I was going to say anyway.
Yeah.
All right, someone make the motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I'd like to say, regardless of how the results work, I think I've served with excellence.
Absolutely.
And, so now, Ken will just not have any. Maybe you could find another way or something.
Well, I mean, I'm more than welcome to serve on the IAC to continue being on the IAC. I've got no problem with that. I think I still can bring some value to IAC, and you know, I'm a full supporter of IAC from the beginning of what we do, and I mean, I think it'll give the retirees a little bit of a hope, seeing that they have some representation on the board, even though it's not the full representation. As I was talking with last week, that, you know, IAC controls the money, so I think that's important to retirees, of the money being looked after more than just the administrative stuff that the board does also.
Well said. Armando, as well, you know, however it works out, you, as a trustee, you serve very, very well. So both of you guys have.
Well, I've got another month to be here.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps Armando will have.
Maybe longer.
Okay, moving on, the monthly contribution report.
Yeah, so the contribution report is in your agenda materials at page 40. This is the July 2023 report, reporting the May data. At the end of May, there were 5,046 police officers and firefighters on the payroll. The police is under their hiring plan by 232 officers, and fire is over by 115. So in combined, there are 117 less than the hiring plan for this period. There were two pay periods in May. Contributions based on actual comp pay were $12.2 million, and the floor right now, as you know, is lowered, which is only 11.6%, so the floor isn't providing any additional contributions for the fund. The contributions were received as expected, so there's really nothing unusual in this report. If there's any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Okay, education and travel.
This next item is your standard list of education classes. Carol has listed some TexPERS and CPERS programs that you could attend. Also, just keep in mind you're always welcome to attend anything else you think might be relevant. She can help you get those approved and get you registered. Also, the PRB has online training, and they're updating those training classes. They are down at the PRB at their last education meeting. They report out which plans are 100% compliant, and we are not one of those plans currently, so it would be nice to get people compliant. So if you have any questions about where you stand, Carol and I are happy to help you with that.
Other than that, not being compliant, there's no penalties for a fund at this time.
No.
If everyone is not compliant.
Right. There's and it's at this point, trying to think of, I saw the agenda. I would say there's 10 to 12 plans out of 99 plans that are 100% compliant. So we're not by far an outlier, but just keep in mind it's something we need to comply with. It is the law. Okay. So with that, I can turn it over to Brenda for her.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. The initial fieldwork for the audit has been completed. We have completed approximately 80% of the PVC items requested by the auditors. Primarily, the items that are outstanding are actuary items and investment-related items. And, of course, we can't start the actuary work until we get the last of the investment items. As I mentioned last month, the largest outstanding item are the Huff Energy financials. They're holding up everything at this point. Once we receive those final financials, it'll take us about 60 days to get the information back from the actuary, complete the audit work, and issue the financials. We are working on the audited financials in all the ways that we can now, the supporting schedules, as well as the annual comprehensive financial report. And I'm happy to report that our 2021 annual financial report did receive the GFOA award. We were recently notified about that. Any questions about the status of the audit?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ryan,
all right.
Fully update.
Already covered liquidation of market assets, but $50 million coming in year to date. We're still we put the safety reserve into drawdown in March of 2022. During that time, we've reallocated $84 million into the portfolio and held back $105 in the safety reserve. We've extended the coverage period from here to July of 24. Consultant search, we've got two decisions there. That's good. Year-to-date return through mid-year, almost exactly the same rate of return, 6.49 on the total portfolio, and then 10.1% double digits for the public market ex cash, which is about 70% of the portfolio. Looking at our initiatives and investment portfolio going forward the rest of this year. We got to the consultant decision today. We're going to talk the next items on the updated public equity structure that the IAC reviewed in June, and then we issued the RFP for the global growth search in late June to six firms. Actually, what's the due date for that? Is it in a week? We should be getting RFPs back. So the idea there is we want to have a recommendation interviews with the IAC with the finalist firms in September. And then a lot of private market planning later this year into next year, and then we're planning, preliminary planning to do a custodial search in 2024, and then initial private market investments, hopefully at some point in 2024. This is just looking at the equity market drawdown. Markets have recovered quite a bit the last quarter of this year. EM is the one that's still kind of in a pretty big drawdown since the beginning of 22. This looks at the Fed funds rate and the market expectations. I think this changed a little bit the last couple of days. It's always moved around, but if we looked at this chart 2 months ago from the May meeting, the market expectations are now about 90 bits higher than they were at that meeting. Ended the quarter with $1.935 billion in AUM, and as I mentioned, overall portfolio return estimated at 6.5%. Looking at the performance of the public market assets that we control, a few things that to point out here is kind of over the three-year period, all three major asset classes shown here are outperforming the benchmark. We've seen really good performance from REM manager RBC compared to the benchmark. And then on fixed income, two of the four are outperforming over the three-year period. Any questions on the public performance outlined here?
It's 200 basis points, 2% difference on 3 years is a strong, you can throw a couple Greek letters, alpha. That's good stuff, and you multiply that 2% times, $1.5 billion, that's
up.
Yeah, that's a significant number. Now we don't have that much in public securities, but I mean, we're at our allocation.
And
these numbers, then that would be that's where we want to go.
And we're getting closer. It's still 70% of the portfolio. And then if you look at the three-year public, it's above the 6.5 as well now. Asset allocation detail, we'll talk about this next, but what I wanted to point out here, when we talk about the public equity structure, what we're really talking about is there's a 55%, 60% target overall to global equity and EM equity, and the structure review is required by the IPS, and it dictates how we sub-allocate to that asset class. So in fixed income, we have a separate allocation for each line item. In equity, we do that through the public equity structure. And then what I'm showing here is the 6% targets to the four active global managers, what I expect us to approve next. So that would lead to money moving from the active managers into the passive product initially. Safe reserve, we're at 116 versus target 174. We've been in discussions with Makita, kind of what level is the right level to pull out of the safe reserve drawdown and start refilling the fixed income portfolio in the short-term core bonds. We're, I think, very close to that point, but we just don't have a whole lot recently to redeploy. So once we get some more money back, we'll consider where we want to take that, redeploy it. We got a 12-month at the current levels of the $9.5 million per month in net outflows covered by the 116 in the safe reserve. And then in the bottom right there on cash, we're good on cash through end of Q3. This is just looking at the calendar going forward. We'll do reviews of the RMA investments in the infrastructure portfolio in August, and then we'll start working through our reviews of the public portfolio in Q3 and Q4. Any questions?
Anything on the IAC? Can we give an update?
Yeah, so.
I mean, basically, you want to start?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we covered
three or four items. I mean, we got a portfolio update from Ryan, just similar to what was given only through May instead of June, so you really caught up. We covered the public equity structure review, which Ryan is going to review in more detail. I guess the only question, Ryan, I had from that was there was a little bit of discussion about having – you want to reduce the concentration with each manager from 8% to 6%, but given our good ability to add alpha with active managers, do we want to add just another two managers in there to get some additional alpha rather than putting as much as we do into the passive portfolio? So okay. If you can address that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to the
okay.
equity structure.
And we also spent a lot, the bulk of the time was on the consultant search, which we just spent an awful lot more time on. And as we talked about, there was mixed results there. And then the, Ryan's also going to address the issue of RFP for the growth officer replacement. So that pretty much encompassed the agenda. I don't know, you want to add anything or anybody else?
No, I mean, the kind of action items we have planned for September, interviews with the finalists, and then we'll start looking at asset allocation with the key to the summer, and then maybe have some additional thoughts to take to the IT in September.
Josh, we're going into closed session again to have another.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some questions that I know I have
okay.
to wait.
Sure.
One question on the castle, since we're going to have Auburn, and Tom, you could answer this too. Is that only available for staff or for IAC members as well as board members? Would they be allowed to use CASEL also? I mean, when you use the CASEL, was it just staff?
Staff.
Staff only? Okay.
But that's part of the negotiation. You can list the names that are going to have access to the CASEL.
Okay. Is it?
We'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah, in closed session.
No, okay. No, we're not. That's something we'll address.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I think it'd be a good idea for ICE, at the very least, the IAC to have access to the castle.
Usually they have multiple turrets on a castle.
Yeah.
What? Turrets.
Oh.
And we got most of the doors of the castle unlocked, so we'll have
them. This is the meaning of life. Yeah, yeah. No.
Which drawbridge?
Come back and fight. All right. So the public equity structure review. We worked closely with Makita. It's their presentation that we'll show some slides from to outline kind of what led to this. Is there were some concerns around the 8% targets we had to active global managers, that being a little bit heavy to have 8% with one manager. So we wanted to look at what may be a more appropriate level for the active manager targets, keeping kind of a neutral posture in the public equity portfolio as compared to the ACWI IMI benchmark. So, what the recommendation with changes would be, I'm going to 65, diligent here, is lowering targets from 8 to 6 on the 4 active global managers, including the one we're going to search for. Lowering the small cap target from 4 to 3%, which we're at the 3% target right now, so there'd be no cash movement needed there. And then increase the passive component target from 15 to 25. Right now, we're not fully allocated, so the underallocation will be in the passive component. My view on this is you know, we're adding a little bit of passive, but it's more about the risk control and active managers, and we've had a good performing active portfolio, so further down the road, maybe not initially, but longer-term objectives could be adding more active managers in that portfolio, or if we reduce the allocation to public equity, I want it to come out of the passive sleeve. So that's how we're viewing it. Aaron, is there anything specific you wanted to point out or cover in this presentation?
No, I think it's just finding that fine line between having enough active to add alpha, but being cognizant of individual manager risk. And so we think this accomplishes, you know, that, you know, threads the needle between those goals.
Ken, do you have a question?
No.
Okay. You look like you were about to ask one stuff. Let's go through the rationale we talked through with IAC. Initially, it would mean we have about $95 million overweight to that 6% target amongst the 4 active managers in the portfolio, so we're working with Russell right now on if there's a way to use him as a transition manager to do that rebalancing from active into passive.
Do we differentiate across cap? So do we use, you know, individual managers for all three, mid, large?
No, we have four global, which is kind of mainly large cap, and then we have two small cap, one U.S. and one international. So this shows, this is regional exposure, but this is market cap exposure. So the blue bar is our current exposure. The pink bar is the index, the ACWI IMI. And when I say a neutral posture, we're trying to add alpha, but not take kind of let the managers take any sector or geographic bets, but still maintain a relatively neutral posture to the benchmark. Any other questions on the public equity structure?
Okay.
All right.
So we want to have a...
We have a motion to approve it.
Okay. We have a motion? Second?
Second.
All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right. So now we're going to go into closed session.
Do you want to do the executive director's report first?
Yes.
Okay. So D.
So that's D.
Right. We'll do D2 before I go into closed session. So your, as we do every month, your NCFERS monitor is provided in your materials, and a TechFERS pension observer is available for you digitally. Since the last board meeting, we've not received any open records requests. As far as a staffing update, you might notice two new faces sitting at the back table there. So we have two new staff members, and we're very pleased and excited about both of them. So to my left, the furthest left, that is Kate Gensler. Kate is taking the place of Cynthia Reyes. Cynthia is our current receptionist, so you've talked to Cynthia multiple times if you've come in the front or you've called. She's retiring after 16 years, so we're happy for Cynthia in her retirement and happy to have Kate join us. Next to Kate is Jenny Singh, and Jenny is replacing one of our administrative clerks in the benefit area. They've both been here for about a week, and Jenny is already up and running and doing the refunds, and she's had a lot of work to do lately, as you saw on the agenda. So we're very pleased with both of the new hires. So they're here today to observe.
Welcome about these.
The last item that I had on the executive director's report is just to give you an update on the independent actuarial services request for proposal that we have out. And as you know, before the 2025 legislative session, we have to go through an analysis of our funding level, and the independent actuary has to make recommendations. So we're in that process. We worked with the Texas Pension Review Board, the PRB, to prepare an RFP. That RFP was distributed widely to all the firms we were aware of. And the responses were due back on June 30th. To that RFP, two firms submitted proposals. We believe both of the firms are capable of doing the work, and the PRB is charged with making the selection. We think they'll make a good choice, and we would be happy with either firm at this point. They will have they have a committee to evaluate those two proposals. That committee then makes a recommendation to the executive director, and they'll discuss that at the PRB actuarial committee meeting on July 27th. And then after that, the name of the firm that's recommending and the other firm's name will be made public, and we will negotiate a contract with them. So that's where we are in that process.
When do we anticipate their work starting?
As soon as we negotiate the contract. Because they'll start with the 2022 valuation, the 1/1/22 valuation, which is already available. And then after that, they'll move into the 2023 valuation. So they'll start immediately. Okay. And that's all I had.
All right. So now we'll go into closed session.